Hello, friends. It was sad. So let me just share a little bit of information that's very, very important for you to understand, that the people who are watching this recorded don't hear you very well. And I've been watching some videos of myself and Scott Hunter, and it looks really sad. Because we'll make something, we'll say something very important, something very pithy, something very wise, as we do.
And all the time.
Then it looks like it doesn't land. So we need you to be louder so that we don't look like idiots in the recorded version. Hello. Hey.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just going to show my wife that part. I am Scott Hanselman. This is my boss, Scott Hunter, and we are the Lesser Scots. And we are here to talk about the introduction to ASP.NET 5. And I want to point out that this is part one of two. Part two is tomorrow morning at 9 with Damian Edwards, who's going to do a deep dive. So if we're going to be kind of 100 and into 200 level here, and then when we get to Damian, we're just going to keep going off into the sky.
We're going to do a big breath thing today. We're going to go across a lot of topics and not go super deep in any of those topics.
Right.
And then tomorrow, we're going to go super deep in a couple topics.
Okay. So do make sure that you take a picture of this QR code and save it for posterity for the future when no one uses QR codes. Today. So this is all about ASP.NET 5, the modern web, and why we made this.
Before we even get into ASP.NET 5, let's...
Oh, you're going to go right to it, aren't you?
Let's talk about... first off, one thing about ASP.NET 5, we just shipped VS 2015 RC yesterday for you guys. Hope you're enjoying that. ASP.NET 5 is not RC. It is, when you play with it, you'll see it says beta 4. And that's because we are a little bit behind the VS schedule. And so we expect, I don't know when they're going to RTM, but I know we're going to RTM basically one update behind them. So whenever VS RTMs, we'll do an RTM about 2 or 3 months after that. That said, we know a lot of folks are building web apps today. And even if you're not using ASP.NET 5 and you're still using MVC 5, Web API 2, Signal R3, Web Forms, there's a bunch of updates in VS 2015 RC that affect you guys as well. And we're just going to scroll through and show a couple of these. There's a blog post up on ASP.NET Web Dev blog.
Yep.
If you go there, you can read all these changes. There's some bugs in VS 2015 RC. Imagine that. There's workarounds for the bugs in this blog post as well. Biggest thing is we did Roslyn support. So even if you're using Web Forms or MVC 5, Web API 2, you get all the new C#, all the new VB features.
This is actually really cool. Here's a blurry screenshot. Here, this is a Web Forms page, but line 7 there is using a new Roslyn C# language feature. So there are cool and interesting stuff happening in Web Forms. We've got async model binding. We've got async await. HTTP 2
all support. The stacks running on System Web, which are MVC 5 and such, they get, I wrecked it. They get HTTP 2 support.
Yeah.
And we added async model binding for Web Forms. And so anybody building bits on the current bits, we just want to say there is love for those bits in this release. Don't forget that as well.
And we do know that it's a little bit confusing, that it feels like the number 5 is a greater number than 4.6. But it is a parallel track. It's the difference between the full framework and the core framework. And we'll talk about those differences as we get into a little more detail. But I just need to make you guys understand that ASP.NET 4.6 kind of makes the world go around. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening on it. So this is happening in parallel.
Right. OK, let's talk about ASP.NET 5. Scott and I don't want to do a lot of slides today. We have lots of demos, and we don't want to spend a lot of time on slides. But I do want to talk about some of the design tenets around ASP.NET 5. One of them is we want to be totally modular. When we built ASP.NET back in the day, the idea in there was let's throw the kitchen sink in here and have every feature turned on by default, because we were trying to bring web developers from our desktop developers into web, and we want to make that as simple as possible. Now we've moved forward to the future, and now we want to make web apps as fast as friggin' possible. And so now you can turn on or off as much of ASP.NET as you want, and we'll show a little bit of that in the demos. Another thing is Scott and I work for the cloud in Microsoft, and we want to make it even easier for you to take an ASP.NET application and publish it to Azure and have it work when you use features like scale up and scale down and stuff like that. And so there's some sort of fundamental changes in the framework that deal with this. Faster development cycle. On my machine, building an MVC5 app or a WebForms app, making a code change and recompiling and stuff is like an 8-second cycle. We've got that down to 2 seconds right now on ASP.NET 5, and we think we maybe can get even another second out of that in the future. I'm going to warn everybody, my laptop has had every version of Visual Studio on it for like the last 6 months. Mine is not fast, even with ASP.NET 5.
Well, it's a couple generations old.
But if you download the RC, you should see the 2 second thing that we're talking about.
Right.
We're cross-platform, so ASP.NET 5, you can build an ASP.NET 5 application, you can run it on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Because of that, that's why you see this choose your editors and tools above. So one of the things we're gonna show today a little bit of, and they're gonna show a lot more on Friday, is pretty much anything that you can do in Visual Studio, we now have a way to do on command line. And that's because if you're on a Mac or Linux machine, there is no Visual Studio. We have Visual Studio Code, which we just announced yesterday.
Right.
But it's an editor.
And this has caused a lot of, I would say confusion, but consternation, where people will say, hey, I like Visual Studio Code. When are you gonna build this fancy new Visual Studio feature into Visual Studio Code? You're missing the point if you ask those kind of questions. There's not gonna be any visual designers in Visual Studio Code. If you wanna know how to do this thing in Visual Studio Code, you do it at the command line, because that's who that's for. But if you are an IDE person, you're gonna wanna do it in the IDE. And the features that we're gonna show you, we're gonna spend some time in text files, doing things at the command line. For all of those things, there is also a gesture, a UI gesture within Visual Studio. So he might prefer to go to the command line and type, you know, restore whatever. Someone else might prefer to right-click on something in Solution Explorer and do the same gesture, but the essence is the same. So we're gonna show you the UI layer and then what's underneath. And the nice thing, of course, is that there's no black boxes anymore.
Right. We're not gonna take the visual out of Visual Studio.
Ooh. That should be a t-shirt, actually. That's pretty. I would hate to call it Text Studio. It's not quite as cool.
Command Line Studio. The other thing is we want ASP.NET to be fast as it possibly can be. And so there's a lot of work that's been done in ASP.NET 5 to make it super fast and mm-hmm. scale a lot more than it does today. So for example, an ASP.NET 5 application uses 90% less memory than a existing ASP.NET application today. And that's because we stripped a bunch of stuff out and reworked a bunch of stuff. To the point that we are comparable or better than Node.js in many, many situations now. So that's kind of the core tenets on ASP.NET 5.
Okay. And then I think this is actually our final slide. Isn't that nice? We are 5 minutes in and we are on our last slide. It is a developer conference, after all. There's actually a person from a popular news site who was complaining about all the code that was being showed in the keynote. Thank you. Make sure they can hear you on the tape. This is a developer conference.
Next year we're going to put on the Microsoft PowerPoint conference just for those people.
Yes. So these circled parts in yellow are the parts of ASP.NET and .NET that are open source, and there are more than there are not. All of the jitter, all of the compilers, all the core libraries, the .NET Core framework itself, ASP.NET 5, parts 4 and 5, MVC, SignalR, all open source. You notice the pieces that aren't are some of the historical pieces, the pieces that ship with Windows, the pieces for which there are no good reasons for them to yet be open source.
Even some of the ones that are not circled, the source code is available, like .NET 4.6.
Well, for all of this, basically, you can get the source, it's source opened.
Right.
Reference source.
And some of the reason there is we did open the source code and put a lot of the source code for .NET 4.6 up in GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is we can't really take a contribution because if you change anything in that framework, something breaks somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys all in the room have probably got, you know, a 4.5.1 or a 4.5.2 and beat your head against the wall when something didn't work, and that's why we don't take changes on that thing.
And that's actually a really great point for why we've architected this the way it is that you want to be able to take application A and put it on a machine in IT, and then someone else, another department, makes app B, and you don't want to have, well, we don't have .NET 4.5.2 on that machine. We have 4.5.1, and we're afraid to take this. That goes away. App B and app A can live together with their own private builds of the .NET framework, private builds of whatever they like. So let's switch over, and that's the last slide. Also, a pretty exciting announcement here.
This is a new site we have called ASP.NET.
It's docs.ASP.NET.
Oh, he's got a fancier URL.
Is this mouse stop working?
I turned it off.
How do I use, you gotta use the little
you have
nubby?
To use the, you have to use the stick, man.
Oh, man. Only managers use the nubbin on this thing.
That trackpad is terrible.
This is docs.asp.net, and this is powered by Read the Docs, which is a Sphinx-based markdown-style restructured text continuous integration for docs. So our docs are on GitHub. Isn't that cool? Check this out. Say, oh, your first application on a Mac. Blah, 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 blah. Lovely docs, and then at the bottom, fork these docs, right? But check this out. Click on the version of the docs. Oh, I want a PDF, or I want an EPUB, or I want to read that on my Kindle. Click on PDF, and now you're bringing down the docs, and when the changes get made in GitHub, that automatically flows through. So we're giving that a try.
Yeah, once we fill this totally out, we actually plan to publish those eBooks ourselves on some of the stores.
So. Yeah, and we're going to profit.
Yeah.
See, check it out. Isn't that nice? All right, bunch of blank pages. I'm just kidding. No, it's there. That page was intentionally left blank.
All books start with at least two blank pages. I don't know why.
Kill trees. It's a big tree lobby.
As we were saying earlier, ASP.NET 5 is modular. And so this is what the minimal ASP.NET application looks like today.
So this is Hello World?
This is Hello World. And this looks like very similar to something that you would see in something like Node.js.
Now this isn't File New Project default app. This is empty.
This is File New Project empty application.
Okay, so this is a difference between the one where you get Bootstrap and all the CSS. This is raw. Now, the difference between doing this and opening up web forms and going into default.aspx and typing response.writeline, hello world, is what, sir?
I didn't hear a word you said.
I know you didn't, because you never listened to me.
Of course not.
The difference between this here and going into default.aspx and saying response.write hello world.
Oh, yeah. And if you're doing default.aspx or MVC or any of those kinds of things, there's a whole pile of modules that are going to run inside of IIS.
Right, layers between you and hello world. Layers for good reason, though. And this
yes.
is the important thing. When you hear that something is improved in performance by 200%, that doesn't mean that it sucked 200% before and we just found something. We were literally trying to understand the difference between how do you build a minivan, which is extremely useful for carrying kids and groceries around, and how do you build a motorcycle, but use the same core concepts. We wanted to make ASP.NET 5 be both of those things.
So you can opt into anything that you want here, and this is when you see some of these synthetic benchmarks against ASP.NET, and they're comparing, you know, we're running modules, we're running routing, we're running error pages,
yeah.
running all that technology to go spit out Hello World. Guess what? We're going to be slower.
Right. You can't benchmark Node and web forms if Node, all they do is a handler that says Hello World.
And just to kind of prove
this is a handler, by the way, that says Hello World. This would be what you would compare.
But even that, this is less than a handler. Handler is still going to have all that other stuff happen.
So you have basically nothing, right?
I have nothing.
So this would give me a yellow screen of death, right?
So normally you would get a nice error page from ASP.NET if you ran this. And
okay.
You're going to get a much lower level error page when I run this.
Okay. It's better be yellow. It's white.
And so you get basically a stack dump. And
who did that come from?
That came from our web host.
Okay, from the host of
our, the our host. This is the thing that holds the whole thing together.
Mm-hmm.
It boots the stack up, said, hey, the app blew up in my face.
Okay.
And here's what I put out. Now, what's interesting, if you actually want a nice error page to show how modular we are, let me jump in down here and add an error page.
And now, while he's doing that, he could go to references and add reference or add new get. But those references are there on the left-hand side. So that's an example of there's the UI gesture and the text gesture. Use what makes you happy. The result is the same. Notice that when he typed that diagnostics, it appeared on the right-hand side. If he had done that with the UI gesture, it would have appeared in the text file. Make sense?
So now I've got an app that says use error page. So I basically enabled an error page. So now if I run the app again.
Okay. We do not ship with an error page.
Now we get a
super. Hang on. And you've got bunch of stuff in here. Headers. That doesn't do anything.
This is an empty app.
Oh, it's an empty app.
There's not much
in this. Oh, it doesn't
have
anything.
There's not much in this app.
But those will light up as we start filling it up with stuff.
Right. But this is an,
can I change that?
You can now change and replace this. You can write your own error page, which you never could have done before because there's no way to recompile system web and replace the error page.
So it's a pipeline.
Pipeline.
Nice.
Another fun thing to show here as well is, and I'll let you describe this folder. We have a new folder called dubdubroot.
Yeah, now this is a really interesting one. When MVC came out, people who were web forms people got freaked out because you'd go and hit /home/index, and they'd go looking for that on disk. And this was actually a weakness of web forms developers about 10, 15 years ago, because what would happen is we'd go to other frameworks and we'd go looking for stuff because we thought that there was a direct relationship between the URL and the disk. Okay? Move forward into the new world where you've got JavaScript libraries that you bring in that need to be squished and CSS that needs to be minified. There is now a difference between the code that you look at and the resulting build of your application. So www.root is now a folder, a place that lives under your app. That's where static stuff is served out of. So if you want to serve foo.html, you don't drop it in the root of your project, you drop it in www.root. The value that that provides is that I can add a bunch of JavaScript libraries. That doesn't automatically make them accessible to my application. They get accessible to my app when I copy them into www.root, which means I can have the unminified versions out, and I can be looking at them, and then I can go and post-process them and drop them in there. So what have you done, sir?
So what we're going to do now is I added, if we go back to Visual Studio, I added a hello.html file to my application.
So you have hello.html. So he put that inside www.root. Okay, so then does it get served when you ask for it?
And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask for that.
Okay.
It did not get served.
Well, it said hello.html.
Well, my app spits out hello world no matter what. So.
Oh, because the handler is doing everything.
So you
can type anything you want up there, just like, and then it'll just work?
Yes, I could type foobar. Well, I mean, let's see what happens.
You don't even know.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. Basically, it catches everything. But the point there is we don't even serve static files by default.
So we don't include an error page, and we don't include a static file handler. That is innovation. Now, the point here is that it's a cafeteria plan. You get exactly what you want, no more than you ask for.
So in this case,
puts you in absolute control.
I just added static files back, and I'll come over here, and I'll just now say app dot.
Now, if you don't mind, pause there for a second, please. I just want to point this out, because this whole use thing is confusing. You see those arrows that are pointing down? Those are extension methods. When he added that static file thing in, there is now a use static files. It's not that you have to memorize a whole bunch of use this and use that kind of stuff. As you add new packages, as you go and let's say someone makes the open source way better version of the yellow screen of death. He'll just swap out his version, swap that one in, and then he'll use their extension method, and that adds it into the pipeline. That's how that appeared there. So can we serve HTML with this new fangled?
There you go. Hello from the build conference.
It's even better when it's big font.
So that's just showing you, we are now modular. You can turn on or off all of our features as much as you want. So now let's go and create another app.
Like an actual default
app. A real app.
Yeah. And this is also an interesting point. While he makes this new app, there's a difference between a web forms app that has session and cookie management and all those kinds of things, an MVC app that has multiple layers, and a very low-level, tiny, maybe an IoT scenario where you've got ASP.NET serving JSON, and you're doing that directly, or something in between with web API. We want you to be able to do those little scenarios and the big scenarios, and because you can pick the pieces that you want, you're going to get the perf. And you're never going to be asking yourself a question like, well, what's in between me and the wire? You see what I'm saying? Abstraction layers can get you in trouble when you add too many layers of abstraction. And we hid a lot of stuff in web forms. And that's OK, because it's a powerful framework for putting together composable apps. But we hid them because dragging a button onto a design surface and making it button click was an important scenario. It's an important scenario. But now we're in a new world.
Right. One of the key tenets of the new world, because we now don't require Visual Studio to run, is we do all of our compilation inside of ASP.NET. ASP.NET knows how to compile itself. Mm. And so in this scenario, I'm going to modify this. You know, I've got the page up here, your application description page.
Okay.
And we'll say hello build.
Now, just to be clear, this is not in a view. You're in C#
code. I'm in C# code.
Okay. And you haven't typed Control-Shift-V.
I've not saved anything at all.
Don't trick them.
And on your machine, this will take 2 seconds. On my machine, it'll take like 6 seconds.
And that's because of you. Oh, that wasn't too bad.
Too much junk on my machine.
Okay.
But the point here is we're now building live. And what's cool about this, we're using Roslyn to do this. And one of the perf improvements we have is when we compile now, we no longer save to disk.
Well, because when you make a change, you save some C# to disk, then you load it back up into the compiler, then the compiler saves the DLL back to disk, and then you pick the DLL up, and then you run the DLL, right? That's just how the circle of life works when you compile. In this world, you save the text file to disk, you read it up, and you compile it in memory, and the assembly always stays in memory. It sits there. Nothing ever got emitted to disk.
That said, we know that when people publish your applications, they want to be able to pre-compile them and put them up as well.
Right.
We have the capabilities to do that.
Right.
Is there even a bin folder here?
Is there a bin folder? I don't know how to use the nubbin here. Is there an obj? Where did you put the DLL?
What DLLs?
Oh, darn you, Hunter. So there's no bin and there's no obj.
There's no DLLs.
Because when you do things in Node or Ruby or Python where these interpreted languages, you type some code and you hit refresh, you type some code and you hit refresh. But there's value and there's power in the CLR and in C# and VB, so you want to have those kinds of statically typed languages. How do you get the feeling of a dynamic language and that edit and, you know, just refresh, 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 but also the speed and the power of .NET? You do that with Roslyn.
Right. Next is references. If you look at references here, it's now got these two references to these two frameworks we have.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to zoom in a second.
Yeah.
DNX, which is .NET execution.
.NET execution environment, right?
Yep.
Is that what it is?
And we have one for 4.51, and we have which will run on 4.5, 4.52, 4.6.
Ah, so you are actually compiling this for two different frameworks right now.
Correct.
Okay. This is kind of like with Universal Apps, you compile for this, you compile for that. You're compiling simultaneously for .NET Full Framework.
And .NET Core.
And .NET Core.
Right. And now packages show up in references. You know, 5 years after creating NuGet packages, now first class.
This is a really important point. ASP.NET 5 works on both frameworks. It's not two different versions of ASP.NET. Okay, it runs on the full framework. It runs on the core framework. You then target them both. And then if you use something that's in the core CLR, it will warn you. And then you can decide if you want to ifdef around that.
But if you look at like Unity framework.
So you're actually getting a graph, a dependency graph here. Ah, look, that one's a NuGet package, and that one must be local.
Yes, or part of system.
Okay, so in the GAC somewhere.
That means it's actually part of the framework.
I like that the version numbers show, too. That's cool.
So that's a new concept.
Okay. You understand that? No, hang on, actually. If you wouldn't mind, go to project.json for me, actually.
That's where we're going next.
Yeah, let's look at frameworks real quick.
Can we talk about project.json and how that replaces CS Proj in a lot of ways?
So with CS Proj, right, which is the C# project file, you would have these includes. And you'd say, well, I'm going to add foo.cs. And then you'd go into CS Proj, and you'd add the foo.cs. In large teams, there'd be a constant merge issue as people add and remove stuff. So we're switching to a format where if it's in the folder, it's in the project. Okay. If you don't want it there, we've inverted it. So now you would exclude that out of the project. Okay.
And so we're showing all the packages that we require for this application to run right here.
And this is a declaration in the project.json of what we want. And then what's in the references is what we got.
Right. And we plan to actually replace packages.config across other projects with a project.json in the future as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming. Something else that we have here is we have commands.
Yeah. This took me a while to get my head around. Because this is a very generic and open way to do things. But initially, I thought it was just a way to start the web server. But you see, it's got commands, and then you've got name, value. The name can be anything you want. It doesn't have to be three letters. He, in that case, said web and said EF. And then the string on the other side there is actually a type name. And you could have your own commands. So then you would go and say, generate code or run this. Any generic command or task you might want to run that wasn't being handled for you by grunt or gulp, and we'll talk about those. So here he's got the entity framework stuff, he's got a cogen, and then he's got web, which runs, in this case, the ASP.NET web server. But when we look at this on another platform, we might use a different web server, and we would type DNX foo, where foo was some custom thing.
Right.
It's a very extensible way to do commands.
So if I want to run that command, I run the .NET executor, and I give it a dot for the current directory, and I tell it the name of the command that I want to run. So I want to run web, at which point I'm going to launch the web browser or web server.
Okay, so just to be clear, because the fonts are kind of small there, what you've done is you're in the same folder, in the root folder there, of the where the project.json lives, correct?
Yes.
Project.json location.
You can see it right up here.
Did you have to put the dot there?
Yeah. You either put a path to where your project is, or you put a
dot. Could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And then web.
The command you want to run.
The command you want to run in this case, where web. Then web, so if I look in the task explorer, the task manager, I'll see DNX being there, living as the component container. And then it will have instantiated ASP.NET hosting, fired up the web listener, it'll be doing that. Now, if I copied this exact project file over to a Mac and said DNX web, it would fail.
Right. You
need,
why? You need to put a new line in there. Well, if you notice this, this says microsoft.asp.server.weblistener.
Weblistener, HTTP sys.
Weblistener is basically a DLL that we wrote that talks to HTTP sys. Mm. And HTTP sys doesn't exist on the Mac, and so we have another one of these that we've written called Kestrel, and it's the one that we run on a Mac, and it will do the same operation using libuv on a Mac.
Libuv is the underlying stack that makes the Node web server work.
So,
and then, oh, actually, frameworks, sir.
Yeah, let's talk about frameworks real quick.
So the bottom of that, the parallel I wanted to draw was, you see it says DNX 451 and DNX Core 5.0, and you see on the right-hand side it says references. Can you delete the DNX 451 line there? You looking for snacks? What are you
memory
doing
stick.
In there? What's wrong with you? Some kind of diabetic or something. You started looking for snacks. Look how it disappeared, you see? Now you see how it's banged out right now? That's right there. Yep, now it's back. It did a NuGet restore to make sure that it had all the things and then lined them all up. Isn't that cool?
Okay.
All right.
So let's talk about Bower.
Okay, let's talk about Bower. So you know how you've got MS Build, and MS Build's the thing that you use to build stuff on the server side. Other web frameworks and a lot of open source people and front-end web developers use client-side frameworks. They have client-side builds, they have client-side tools, they have library managers, NuGets, and things like that, except they have things like Bower and NPM, and Bower brings down libraries, and NPM brings down libraries and tools. That's all integrated into this now as well. That means that if you see some cool thing that the Node kids are using and you want that too, you can have that.
And you might ask why are we bringing Bower into Visual Studio when we have NuGet already?
Because the whole world uses it.
Right. Today what happens is a lot of us inside of Microsoft and a lot of people that support ASP.NET have gone out to Bower, grabbed scripts from there, wrapped them up in NuGet packages.
That's where Angular is.
And then we try to maintain these things.
Right.
But the reality is they're always out of date. And so we said, why keep being out of date? Let's just go to the source.
So true story, who do you think handles the Angular packages in NuGet for the Angular JavaScript library? Me and John Papa. And why doesn't John Papa do it? Because he got sick of it. And he called me and he said, would you do it? And then I got sick of it and I asked another guy. And it's stupid because we're always behind because it happens 3 hours after the next version of Angular comes out, somebody emails me. Why you don't have Angular on NuGet?
How are we doing on time?
30 minutes.
Okay. So just like we showed in the project.json, you can see here we get full IntelliSense.
So we're not in the project.json anymore. We're in the Bower.
And I've selected AngularJS. And then it's saying what version do I want. I can select the latest version.
Okay.
I can press save.
Now that does not bring Angular into my project. It makes it available to my project. But remember that www root. It's got to get over there. Someone has to put it there. It doesn't just drop it into the root of my system. You know how in NuGet, one of the first things people wanted was the ability to control where the JavaScripts go. Now you get that.
So yeah, we stick this in a special folder, and then we have another file, which is a gulp file,
to zoom out
which will copy this to your www folder.
Right. So we've got grunt and gulp, which are client-side MS builds, their build systems, their task managers. Gulp is the one that's hot right now. And then you would, in your gulp task, change it so that it copied that Angular into wwwroot or whatever you wanted it to be, because everyone puts their script somewhere else.
It is
a two-step process. We'll try to make that as easy as we can.
So the gulp stuff is interesting as well. So we have a new feature in Visual Studio called the Task Runner Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
TRE is what we kind of call it inside the team. And the idea here was, historically, when we've done things like, we want to do something that goes and lints your JavaScript. That means it's going to go look for common JavaScript errors, or it looks at your CSS and looks at common CSS errors. We've taken the open source things that are out there, or we've written our own to replace those and kind of tooled them into Visual Studio.
Right. So if you want to run JS Lint as part of your build, what you've got here is a binding between events that happen in Visual Studio and events that exist or tasks that exist in your gulp file. So if you want to minify your CSS before your build, then you'd put that in your gulp file and you'd add it to before build.
Right. And so we're no longer trying to keep up with these open source libraries. We're just building them in. You don't have to see any of this stuff. This stuff will all be transparent to most developers. You just build and run your application as usual, and this stuff is going to be running behind the scenes.
You might say that's a lot of concepts to learn, but when you go file a new project, it's going to do the right thing by default. It'll have a good, nice gulp file that you can just use. You don't have to think about it.
So one final thing I want to show in this application right now is I want to go to properties.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of my properties, you'll just notice I have this option where I can say I want to use a DNX.
Let's zoom in on that.
And let's zoom in here.
So which version of this execution environment do you want to use? Are we going to do this in the full framework? Are we going to do this in .NET Core? Are we going to pin it to a specific version? Remember what we said before about how, you know, you've got a machine that's got .NET whatever on it and application A. I want to put application B on, and we cannot risk those applications breaking each other. They have to be in their own universe.
So we're going to select Core here.
Okay.
And so now what I've basically told it, when I build, I want to go build this thing for the Core framework, which is the one that lets us have that full side-by-side. Just build and make sure we're still healthy.
Okay.
Okay. And now let's do a publish.
Oh, and funny story, when he actually is pressing build there, it doesn't actually do anything. It just does like spell check.
It does enough to load all the errors in your error window.
Yeah, so
nothing got built.
There's no DLL that got made. He has to go and pack that up and bundle it, and then that is when the actual DLLs happen. So he's going to go and do a publish to a file system, and he's going to publish this onto a USB key.
I'm going to start and just publish it to like a folder on my
Oh, you can do that first?
Here.
Okay.
So we'll just do C back, maybe foo.
C colon.
Yeah.
I think they added that.
We'll put it in foo.
Foo.
Because you need lots of foo.
That's good. All right.
And so what this will do is
Actually, while you're doing that, let's go look at it happen. It's more fun to see it happen. Da, 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 da. Okay, so an app root appeared. Some stuff's going by. Oh, look at that. Where do you think those three things came from, y'all? Those are the commands from project.json.
So can you acquire a laptop?
What kind of laptop is that? Are you is it a Mac? Oh, is it one of the ones you got for free? That is so nice. Thank you for giving me your laptop. Can I have your laptop? Like, open it up, seriously. What kind of VGA thing that the kids using these days? Has it got DV port, MSDN, full-size HDMI? Okay, cool. Is there anything here I shouldn't see?
Not anymore.
Clear my browser history before you put that on stage, Mr. Hanselman. So he's copying this onto his USB key here, okay? So he's publishing to this location. And then what I'm going to do, here, hold that. And this looks important. Is that important? What is that? Oh, that's not, what is that?
That's a network.
That's a network.
Do you want HDMI or do you want DVI?
I want tiny DVI.
You want this?
Well, you're copying, though. You'll never know when it's done. All right.
I can't see the screen here.
Can't see the screen. What does this do? Oh, I broke that. I'm going to read his mail now.
Slow stick.
It's a slow stick? Who brings a slow memory stick to a developer conference?
One of the tenets we talked about earlier was...
Hang on. It says about 90... No, it's about 2 hours. No, it's about... it's about 2 hours 45, again. Seriously, dude. It's like one file. Because the best part about Windows 8 is that dialogue. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, yeah, disappointment.
Too bad they can't see the disappointment. One of the points I want to show about here is, in this case, we actually compiled that ASP.NET application against .NET Core.
It's only like 5 megs.
And because .NET Core is on this, This means the application can run on any machine without affecting that machine at all.
Bang.
This application doesn't touch System 32, it doesn't touch registry, it doesn't touch anything on the machine at all.
Did you install anything on this, Visual Studio like? Visual Studio Code, but not any. You don't have any of the new bits. You haven't done anything yet. Okay. All right, there's pretty much nothing on here. Apparently Britney Spears fell down. I'm just going to read about that real quick. Hang on.
I heard she has an iOS game or something now, too.
Yeah. So I'm going to just run that web command out of the folder here. And you didn't set the console logger to info, so we're actually not. You forgot to turn the console logger on.
Well, it's a bug.
It's your bug. You're the one that didn't do it.
I didn't write the template.
Oh.
I'm the boss.
You are the boss. That's true. Pardon me. 5,000? 5,000?
Yeah, 5,001? 5,000.
5,000.
And it really is running off the memory stick. It's not touching the local drive at all.
That is a website running off his memory stick. Now, I'm going to pull the memory stick out without warning the operating system, because life is too short to safely remove your USB up. Thank you very much. I don't know what's going to happen now. The blue screen is going to... But I'm done with you. Not happy.
Okay. So I'm going to show one more concept here. And this is the notion of what we call environments. How are we doing on time?
20 minutes. We need to
go a little faster.
Go a little faster.
So I can go look at my project again. And if I come over here and do properties, and I go down to debug, you'll notice I have this notion of ASP.NET Env. And that's where you said if you want to have, am I doing a development build? Am I doing a staging build, a production build?
And is that
build?
A magic string for development, or can I make the development called foo? I mean, it's a hashtag, basically.
You can change development to whatever words you want.
So dev, test, staging, staging one, staging two, I can make those things up myself.
Yeah, so why do we care about this? Let's go look at views, and let's go look inside of shared, and let's look at the layout file.
Okay.
Now, first
this is
off,
like this, your master page.
This is showing some stuff which Damien's going to go in tomorrow in more detail in here. We're actually doing a dependency injection here and actually injecting some types and stuff directly into the page.
Mm-hmm.
But more interesting here, look, we have this this new thing that says environment names equals development and environment names equals staging and production.
You see how that's in purple? That's actually not an HTML tag that'll get admitted. It's just letting us know that if we are in development, drop in those style sheets, and if you are in either staging or production, use these other ones.
Well, actually, not even more than use the other ones. If you look at these other ones, they're interesting because they actually point to a version of the scripts on a
CDN.
On a CDN.
Oh, interesting. So you've got Bootstrap coming out of a specific folder locally, and then in production, you switch over to the CDN.
But, well, even better, though, look, we have ASP-fallback-href.
Oh.
That means if the CDN is not available, we'll fall back to your local system. We have a feature called Hack Helpers. Thank you.
That's cool.
So we have this new feature which they're going to go into deep on Friday, which is an awesome feature called Tag Helpers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these tags are. And so even like link, what happens is if I put any of these ASP dashes in there, that tells it that we don't want to use the HTML link. We want to use the special version that we have overridden.
Right.
That understands ASP-fallback.href.
Right. It's a much easier way than going and writing all of that.
And that's
HTML
how that
yourself.
Works. I want to show one more example of tag helpers,
okay.
Which is pretty good, pretty cool. I'm going to go in here.
Login.
And look at the login file.
All right.
And so if I look at this login file, and first off, let's go run the app just so people...
No, it looks like a login page, I'm pretty sure.
I want people to see what it looks like.
Okay. I'm guessing it'll have a username and a password.
I think so.
Text box and a button that says login.
Did you read my mind?
I'm just guessing.
I read my mind.
That was worth the time.
Okay. So if you look at this page, we didn't write HTML.textbox anywhere on here.
Right.
We just wrote HTML. And so these are just input tags, regular input tag. But because it has this ASP-4, that enables the HTML helper, or the tag helper that we've written for this, that understands these things and actually does the equivalent of HTML.textbox.
Right.
Now,
how you do this before, you have to go like at HTML.textbox, write those helpers. The problem with early parts of Razor is that it felt weird as you switched back and forth between HTML and C#.
Well,
this is trying to keep you in HTML more often.
Well, if I wanted to
write... I don't see any C-sharp in here, except for what you're doing right now.
So that would
be the old way.
This is the old way, which was pretty stupid.
Hang on now. It was pretty awesome at the time.
No, it was terrible. We screwed up really bad. So... Well, look at this. We have this awesome editor that has awesome CSS IntelliSense. It's not going to understand what new curly brace quote class equals. We're not in HTML there. We're in C#.
All right, that one part.
You lose all the IntelliSense. And so that was a bad idea. We started using Angular and stuff with our app and Bootstrap. And
I would be a little more measured, sir. It didn't scale.
It sucked. And these ASP4, all the features that you expect exist here. ASP4 knows the model on my page and is giving me all the IntelliSense. So
right.
I'm in an HTML tag. But what happens is as soon as I type quote, I'm actually not in the HTML tag anymore. I'm actually in C#
And now. You got that injected in there because the whole page knows about that. This is for that model.
Tomorrow in the deep dive, Damien's going to come on stage and show you how these things work, show you how to write them yourself. And they're pretty cool. So let's undo any changes we made in here that will not compile. And let's see what we want to do next. Configuration.
We've only got 18 minutes. So
not a problem.
Okay, you feel good?
So another thing that we talked about earlier, when we showed that empty app location, we showed something that had nothing turned on. And now I'm actually looking at a full MVC application. And now you can see I'm booting up a configuration system. As I scroll down, you're going to see that I'm going to boot up the support for Entity Framework, the support for our identity system. You're going to see I'm going to boot up some of the services required for authentication with Facebook. And
I noticed that in the configuration part, you mentioned a JSON thing. Do I have to use JSON for my config?
No, you don't, actually.
This config.json, what if INI files are how we roll in my enterprise? Ooh.
Just for Hanselman, he asked for this. He's been begging us for 5 years. He goes, the one feature ASP.NET needs to succeed
is any
files. Any files.
Don't disrespect the any, man. Seriously, though, the point there is that before doing things like in app settings, you know, it's angle brackets and it's adding more and more stuff into your web config, this is an extensible configuration system that allows you to pull config from wherever you have it. Wherever you makes you happy, wherever your company likes to
put configuration. Well, we also do it in multiple layers. So you might notice here that I first add a JSON file.
Right.
Then I come down here and say...
Well, you add another JSON file, too.
I add another JSON file. That's based on if you want to have a development version of your script. Mm-hmm. The idea is get rid of all those transforms.
You're actually chaining them. So there'd be config.json, then there'd be config.environment.json, and then one would override the
other. Each one can override the other one. And you'll notice at the very bottom here, we have configure environment variables. And we have this because we think if you're going to host something in the cloud, you shouldn't have the config file at all. Your production settings should be handled by your IT department, controlled in the cloud, not by the developer.
And if you've ever done anything with Azure websites, like me, you've accidentally checked in a password or a connection string or something like that into a web config, and then it's like, oh, how do you tell Git that you didn't really mean it? You know? And then tell GitHub that you didn't really mean it. Oh, I guess we're all changing our passwords. With this, you can have the configuration locally. You can have it then in environment variables. So you see how he's got configuration, and then he's got another configuration that's environment specific, and then can override those with environment variables, which are set outside of your code.
More so, has anybody in this room and I ever checked into GitHub any of your connection strings?
Oh, I definitely have. Actually, there's a really great way.
I see one or two hands. I know there's more than that.
If you search GitHub for the word password, you will find a few.
So you'll notice that if I'm in my development environment, which means I'm right where I am now, we had another one here called add user secrets.
Okay.
And so the idea is we built a feature into ASP.NET where you never ever put your connection strings inside of the folder structure here, which means you never have the chance of accidentally git pushing it up to your server.
Nice.
So thank you. So what I would do is I would run this new command we have called user secret.
Hang on, user secret. That is yet another command line thing for me to learn.
We will have Visual Studio tooling for this as well.
But is this an actual command line?
It is something that you're going to describe and explain how to write tomorrow. This is actually ASP.NET 5 console app or a DNX console app that's installed in my path.
Remember how we had all those commands in project.json? your .NET execution environment can have commands as well. So this is actually one of those. You can make your own. This is not, you're not going to have to go learn a whole pile of these. You can write your own.
And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say appsettings.sitetitle. Let's spell it right. And I can set it
That's
to...
That's just a magic string? Appsettings.sitetitle?
I'll show where I got that from. That's okay. A name in our project.config right now.
Okay.
And so what that does is I can now come in here and say, you know, list my...
And is this using like DP API or what secret place is this?
I'm not going to tell you.
Well, that's not really
helpful. If you want to find out, you can go look in the source code in GitHub and find out where it actually gets stored. What we technically do is we recommend that you put connection strings in with this tool. And what this tool actually does is it puts those things inside of your user folder.
That's not very secret.
Well, it's not in your project, which means it's not going to go to GitHub.
That's actually really
That's the
very,
only thing we care about very, is we don't want that stuff stored in your project, so it goes to GitHub. And I should be able to come down here in the application and pull that back out. But I'm going to jump ahead.
Yeah, in the interest of time.
In the interest of time.
Let us jump ahead. We've got about 14 minutes. Do you want to do that one or that one? And then we need to do all these things here. Yeah. And then this other six pages.
Let's do controller first.
Let's do that.
And because that's a simpler scenario.
And then LLG.
And then we'll jump in and do that.
All right.
Okay, so let me unwind a few things here. Gets things straightened back out. Let's go to my controller folder.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go add a new controller.
So before there was adding controllers and deriving them from controller or deriving them from API controller, and then we unified those, so now you've got an MVC controller and a web API controller are the same thing. But sometimes still people don't necessarily want to have a controller-based class, right? They want a controller-less controller. Is that what they want?
I don't know.
That kind of erodes confidence as you run the team.
So, the point of this example is, we were saying earlier about ASP.NET being modular and you getting to opt in to how much stuff that you want.
Right.
What if you don't want our controller-based class?
Mm-hmm.
Today, you can do a bunch of Voodoo and MVC to work around that. In the new world, you can use as much or as little of MVC as you want here. I've got a simple class called Scott Controller. It has an index method, it returns a string, and it says, this is from my controller.
That is a POCO class, plain old CLR object. Now, does that mean that I can go and start randomly calling functions on public classes and that would be a bad thing?
Conventions. So this only works.
That's a big white screen, yeah.
This only works because my name was Scott Controller. And so by convention, we've always done this. MVC's always worked this way, where it implies this.
Okay, because the name ended in controller.
Correct.
So then I'm going to log into someone's company and hope that they have things that are named controller.
Of course.
But the office of the controller would probably be a good place to start.
Yes. A point about this is I could actually add the controller base class if I wanted to here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have to. We use dependency injection as a built-in feature inside of ASP.NET 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything is being dependency injected in here. If I want to go grab any of the things that you would find on the controller, they're technically being dependency injected in. If you go look at the source code for the new controller base class, all it does is have a constructor that takes all the things that are being brought in by dependency injection and applies
them. Because when you go into a controller today, you say this dot, and there's all this great stuff that's available, and view state, and bags, and action results, and all those kinds of things. Here, you're on your own, right? But no, it's being injected in by the system.
An example of that is, notice here I've got this logger factory that we add console logging on. It's set by default, set to warning. Scott and I want this to be set to a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at this, this is returning it's using an iLogger factory.
Right.
I could take an iLogger factory and make that a constructor on my controller-less controller.
Okay, so my POCO controller there, my plain old object there, I could say make a constructor for it. It takes an iLogger factory, and it will automatically end up in there, and then I can squirrel it away and use it.
Correct. I'm not going to do it, but exactly.
Does that make sense? All right, good. You like that.
And so we have dependency injection built in, but we also want to say if you want to use your own thing?
Yeah.
We support all the popular DIs that exist today for ASP.NET already. We have shims for them that work. So you don't have to use our thing, but we don't require one of those to go.
So we've talked about the concept of DNX, and we've seen this .NET execution environment. Let's talk about that briefly at the command line. And I'm going to have to insist that you zoom in on that. There we go. And so the .NET version manager, the DNVM, is a command line that's going to allow you to manage all these different frameworks, because we anticipate a world where there's going to be, you know, four or five of these different ones, and you're going to be testing on one as you develop actively on another, or maybe someone finds a bug in the core CLR and they want to change it. They're going to make their own private build of that, or you're going to have, you know, Mono might be one, and the core CLR might be another, and you're going to move around. DNVM will list those out. So he can type DNVM space list and see them. And he actually has four versions there, right? One for each architecture, CLR and core CLR. And then if he went and installed a new one, like beta 3 or beta 5, those are going to show up there. And notice where they live. They live not in, you know, system 32. They live in his user folder.
Yeah, I can go. I've got a, I opened the, my user folder here. I've got this folder called DNX, and inside of DNX.
Actually, if you don't mind, do you see where it says default there? Here.
Yeah.
I just think this is really cool. This is one of those things, like, you know, when we keep saying there's no black boxes, there's no black boxes. You see how it says default, and then one of them is marked active, right? And it's like, default. This is me at home. I'm like, default. Okay.
That means from this command
alias,
prompt.
Alias default. What's that about? I don't like secrets. Alias. What's that? Ugh. I found it. Default. How did they keep track?
It's magic. It's a black box.
So I could put a file in there called foo.txt and put the name of a DNX in there and then go DNX use foo, and it'll work. It's just sometimes the simplest thing works.
The same thing is
so
all these runtimes are in my DNX runtimes folder.
Yeah, so you want to uninstall one, you delete it.
Just delete it.
Does that make sense?
These don't affect your machine. These are all just in their own folders by themselves. Full control. So let's swap
over.
You do that.
And I'll come over here and push what I think is that button. It's flashing, it's thinking, and now it's here. Okay.
Okay, so I'm on a Mac now.
You have 8 minutes.
Fun, fun, fun. And I'm going to type yo ASP.NET. And while I do this, why don't you explain what yo is and what this is doing?
So there's no file new project on a Mac. There's no Visual Studio on a Mac. But there's a thing called Yeoman. And Yeoman is a templating generator. It's file new project for front-end web developers. Node folks do this, and they'll make their own generators. So there's one called ASP.NET Generator that you can install once you've got Yeoman. And when you type, he just type yo ASP.NET, you get a series of generator choices. You can pick from the Nancy ASP.NET open source framework, or from an empty app, or an MVC app. And then he types, did you type DNU there?
No, what I did here is I went in the folder.
How'd you do the restore?
So the folder looks just like it is now, and
you
I'm going to say.
You did a restore, though. How'd
yep,
you do
DNU
that?
Restore.
So DNU.NET utility, he basically did a NuGet restore.
That's what this is.
Okay. And that's going out. And then in that, he says, NuGet restore. It restores not just the, basically everything that it needs, the NPM, the Bower, the NuGet. And now he's in Visual Studio Code.
And we'll go into the web application folder here.
That's still going?
Yep.
That's okay.
I'm just going to show the source code here.
Oh, okay. And you see this little fire here in the corner, in the lower left corner, where it says one project. Click on that. That found the project.json. That little fire represents OmniSharp, which is an open source project that knows about these things. And if you go to omnisharp.net, you can get IntelliSense on Mac and Linux for Emacs, Vim, Brackets, Atom, whatever makes you happy. It comes with Visual Studio Code.
There's been a few people that have asked questions about Visual Studio Code and IntelliSense with C# and stuff like that. And we want to point out that right now, for Visual Studio Code, the IntelliSense for C# is for ASP.NET projects,
right,
or DNX projects and DNX console projects.
Are you on the network? That's probably why that's not working. See how it's spinning in NPM?
I see that. Did we unplug the network?
Did we unplug the network? Was that, this was important.
No, that's.
Oh. Don't worry about it.
I will fix it while you play with this toy. Why don't you play with that toy?
You sure?
Yeah.
It was kind of the finale.
Let's swap back.
All right. Kind of spoiled the finale. What does this button do? We want to prove that it's modular, that it's fun, and you can play. You can do fun things. So in here, in samples, in hello, what's it? I'm going to go ahead and run that. Bring up this web browser.
So one of the cool things about what we're doing with ASP.NET being open source and with .NET Core being open source is now people can do all kinds of crazy stuff with our platforms. We had somebody just last weekend port .NET Core to FreeBSD as an example of something that the community's done. And Scott's going to show you some crazy thing where he's got...
So here is ASP.NET running on this Raspberry Pi. Now, this is not a declaration of support for ASP.NET and the Raspberry Pi. This is a declaration of, this is a really cool, hackable, lightweight framework that we can start porting to all sorts of interesting stuff. In this case here, on the Raspberry Pi, since it's an ARM device, I'm using Mono. You'll continue to be able to plug these things in any way that you want. If I get a build of the Core CLR that runs in the Raspberry Pi, maybe I could swap it out. And with that .NET version manager, you can see how I might potentially do something like that. So in my mind, I'm imagining the power that I can be on a Raspberry Pi returning JSON. So I'm imagining like IoT scenarios where I'm going to return the JSON of like the moisture content of one of my wife's plants, right? And then I can scale my application all the way up into Azure, and it's from 64K to 64 terabytes or whatever. That's what I think is exciting about a modular ASP.NET. This is just a hello world, but I could certainly spin through JSON, talk to devices, do GPIO or whatever. I don't know which builds work and which builds don't. I just know that this build worked. So it is definitely in a hacker phase when you're doing crazy stuff like what I'm trying to accomplish here. Can I switch over to there?
Let me just change one thing, and yes, you can.
Okay.
The network does not like us, so I just did a simpler project.
Okay. So he's on code on this Mac here. You see that OmniSharp there and Visual Studio Code found one project. Can you type context dot?
Well, I'll just do this is just, first off, just like int a equals zero, a dot.
Yeah, you see how int, so no, do var. Do var a. That way you don't give it a hint what it is. See what I'm saying? So a is an int, right? So then you get inty stuff. So then go and do change a to a string. Like var a equals and
yeah,
then some string.
Yeah, before I do that, let's show one.
And then you'll get IntelliSense and not just autocomplete.
Get
and that's
all
what's
that
exciting
stuff.
About
you get
that.
Full IntelliSense for these things. I also, as Scott was saying earlier, I went to the command line and ran dnx-kestrel because in this particular case, I'm on a Mac. I don't have HTTP sys.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've got the kestrel command showing up here.
And that's, yeah, so it's still using ASP.NET hosting, but if he goes to the right there, the server is Kestrel. And Kestrel uses libuv, or libuv, as Fowler likes to call it. He's also the guy who thinks that NuGets are called nupkegs.
That's a lawn.
That's not going to happen. We're not going to let that happen.
And here's Hello World running on a Mac with ASP.NET with Visual Studio Code.
So if you go up to docs.asp.net, you can go and see our continuous integration server that is running our docs regularly. You can get involved. You can go to github.asp.net/home, and you can find all of this stuff up at www.asp.net.
Best place to find it is www.asp.net/vnext.
Well, and I actually, to give a little bit of a plug for that, if we go up to asp.net/vnext, one of the things that we've been doing is every Tuesday, we do a community stand-up, basically a live broadcast, just like a stand-up, a Scrum stand-up, 15, 20 minutes of what happened that week in ASP.NET. Not who blogged what, but literally what got checked in, what worked, what didn't, what tests are failing, what are we, where are we heading? We've been doing this for 29 different episodes.
They're cool episodes. You'll hear us talk about arguing about how we think this thing should be built and what it should look like, and mm-hmm. we ask people on the to chat us and give us their opinions. We look at the comments on the YouTube videos.
Yep. So definitely get involved in that. It's every Tuesday. And there you go. You feel good?
That's ASP.NET 5.
I thought that went okay.
We missed the logging stuff. And so tomorrow in the deep dive, we'll make sure you guys cover logging.
Yeah, so we did not cover how logging works and how to plug the new logging subsystem into diagnostics.trace. So we'll make sure to
cover that tomorrow. But we got everything else we wanted to cover. So.
All right, cool. Thank you all very, very much.